This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hunter Biden got convicted. We have Josh Hammer here to talk about it and Buck Sexton here to talk about it. We have the Attorney General of Missouri here to talk about it and Carol Markowitz. We're just going to do a lot of talking tonight on I'm Right. All right. The news of the day. Hunter Biden got convicted of gun crimes. And first of all, let's cover a couple things here. Hunter Biden got convicted of gun crimes for a couple different reasons. The first reason is Hunter Biden, obviously a criminal. Anyone who's seen the laptop understands that Hunter Biden is into all sorts of crimes, financial crimes, drug crimes, human trafficking crimes. He's a criminal. And while I'm not a criminal, I do understand that being a criminal comes with certain risks. You really don't want to get caught. And if you do get caught, it's important that you don't have evidence of your crimes. Hunter Biden has kind of approached the criminal life in a different way, and that every time Hunter Biden chose to commit crimes, he would take not just pictures, but video of him committing said crimes. And then after taking these videos, he would take his laptop and he would put the video recordings on the laptop. And then after having this laptop with all of your crimes recorded on the laptop, Hunter Biden gets to his laptop one day and says, oh my gosh, I need a firmware update or something or whatever was going on. And so he takes the laptop with all of his crimes on it and he takes it down to a laptop repair shop. And he says, hey, man, I got this laptop. Can you fix my laptop? But wait, there's more. After recording the crimes, putting the crimes on the laptop, and then taking the laptop down to the computer repair shop, Hunter Biden then just leaves it there. He just kind of forgets about it. And I don't know if you know this, but dry cleaners, laptop repair shops, whatever, they have rules where if you leave something there for a certain amount of time, they get to take possession of it. So again, I'm not a criminal mastermind, I admit that, but in general, it's probably a bad idea to commit all these crimes, record the committing of the crimes, put them on a laptop, and then hand them over to a complete stranger and just walk away. In general, that comes with risks. And look, obviously, today the system is trying to take advantage of this. The system has a credibility crisis. They have a credibility problem. People can see. They understand how evil this government has become. They understand the DOJ is just the arm of the Democrat Party now. They work to arrest and imprison Republicans and get Democrats off scot-free. David Weiss was a special counsel in this case. Do keep in mind before we play this little clip of David Weiss that David Weiss tried to get Hunter Biden off with a slap on the wrist, essentially kind of get him a little wrist slap and blanket immunity, and the deal was so ridiculous, the judge takes a look at it on the day it was supposed to get signed and says, wait, what? No, this is crazy. This is like an immunity deal. David Weiss did everything he could possibly do to get Hunter Biden out of this. But the judge kind of blew all that up, and then David Weiss had to move forward, and today he's out there talking about justice.
No one in this country is above the law. Everyone must be accountable for their actions, even this defendant. However, Hunter Biden should be no more accountable than any other citizen convicted of this same conduct.
Okay. You're going to see a lot of this today. You probably already have seen a lot of this today. Dirty communists running to the television, talking about how this proves our DOJ isn't corrupted. Oh, this proves that we have just a very bipartisan system. There aren't two tiers of justice in this country, which is, of course, ridiculous if you know anything about the background of this case, David Weiss, the FBI conduct, and otherwise. Joining me now, my friend Josh Hammer, to analyze this whole thing. Okay, Josh, Hunter Biden's officially a convicted felon. Apparently, he's facing up to a whole lot of years in federal prison. I have my doubts whether that's the way this is going to go, but you know these things. I do not. What do you make of all this?
All right, so some quick initial thoughts here. So, Jesse, a lot of our friends in conservative commentary were dismissing this case. And look, it is to an extent a show trial. I mean, the special counsel, David Weiss, he slow-walked this thing. He deliberately refused to bring charges and all the foreign influence peddling, the fact that Hunter was making 83 G's a month from Burisma, no doubt for his expertise in Eastern European oil and natural gas assets, by the way. But the fact that he was doing that while orchestrating meetings between the Ukrainians and the big guy Joe, obviously we know by now that the special counsel did not touch any of that. But the reason that I actually disagree, and that I have been paying close attention to this trial on my show, America on Trial, is because Hunter Biden was so obviously beyond the smallest sliver of a doubt whatsoever, guilty as can possibly be on these charges. I mean, how do I know that? Well, one, because he literally admitted it during his memoir, Beautiful Things, in 2021, which, by the way, they actually read the audiobook from at trial in Hunter Biden's voice because he recorded the audiobook for that book for his book publisher. And the fact that it was right there on the laptop, which the prosecutors, to their credit, introduced it as evidence at trial. They said over and over again, the prosecutors, no one is above the law. And the jurors deserve a lot of credit here. The jurors deserve a lot of credit for doing the right thing. So I am happy. Now, Jesse, am I going to come here and say that this is the end of the two-tier justice system, that America is back to a healthy society, equal justice under law? No. You know, I am not quite that optimistic. I'm not going to put on my rose-colored glasses that much. But, you know, Jesse, there are some folks on our side who I think are professional doomsdayers. They love kind of channeling the prophet Jeremiah, the prophet of lamentation. And they love just saying that, woe is me, everything is bad, nothing is good. We should do a better job of just taking the W, of just sometimes just taking the win. And this is a win. This is an unambiguous win. Now the obvious question comes in sentencing, which you teed up quite nicely there. Is he actually going to go to jail?
Okay, so whether or not he goes to jail, this prosecutor did everything he could to try to make sure Hunter Biden got out of this scot-free before he then had to throw the book at him, right? I do remember that, correct?
Yeah, totally. So the special counsel, David Weiss, slow-walked this thing for years and years. He took way too long. I mean, FARA, the Foreign Agents Registration Act, which is the main foreign corruption, the main law that Hunter Biden probably violated with his Ukrainian, Romanian, and Chinese dealings. You know, we have either surpassed or we are rapidly approaching the statute of limitations at this point, and that seems a little bit more than deliberate, you might say. The special counsel, David Weiss, by the way, what he also did was he submitted this sweetheart plea deal, if you recall, just under a year ago, last summer, to the judge, Mariel Noriega. That plea deal would have gotten Hunter Biden a guarantee not to serve any time in jail. The judge, to her credit, and, you know, as a former law clerk, I have to say, to the law clerk's credit for alerting the judge, she peeked under the hood and realized this didn't quite make sense, so they rejected the plea deal. So this prosecutor definitely does deserve some scrutiny here. On the other hand, like I said, once the trial actually started, the prosecutor, you know, they did everything they could. I mean, they introduced the laptop itself at trial, the same laptop that the media, you know, 2 years ago was saying was Russian disinformation. Now it's being used as smoking gun evidence by the FBI at trial. Pretty crazy how no one is calling for accountability of the media and the deep state and big tech for that, by the way. But yes, they obviously have hid the foreign stuff. And, you know, what I am saying is that if Donald Trump wins a second term come January 2025, there is nothing stopping him, that I'm aware of at least, from appointing a new special counsel to revisit these FARA and foreign corruption charges that this special counsel declined to prosecute. You have a double jeopardy clause in the Constitution, which means that if you are found not guilty, you can't then be tried guilty again. That's double jeopardy. There's nothing that I'm aware of that says that a special counsel has looked and then decided not to bring charges. There's nothing that I'm aware of that would then prohibit another counsel from exercising his prosecutorial discretion to bring charges in a subsequent administration. So Trump should do that come January 2025.
Do we think he will? Trump obviously is running for president, so he says some things here, says some things there. I can't decide what Trump we're going to get if Trump wins the election. Are we going to get the sword of God who's going to come in and start cleaning things out? Or are we going to get the Trump who just kind of wants to be a normal president and return things back to normal, which of course won't return anything to normal at all? What is your sense on what we're going to get if we get President Trump part two?
You know, I hope that he has a chip on his shoulder. I have to imagine that part of the reason that he's running for president in the first place, Jesse, is that he has a chip on his shoulder because of the 2020 election and all the shenanigans and all that there. But I have to at least hope that he is willing to prosecute people like Hunter Biden. I mean, Jesse, you and I have been two of the people that have been singing this same tune for many years now, which is the rule of law in America is fundamentally broken. I mean, we see it out in the open day in and day out. It's not just Donald Trump, by the way. A lot of people say, oh, it's just Donald Trump. Yeah, total nonsense. You know, Steve Bannon, Peter Navarro going to jail, my friend John Eastman potentially going to jail, being disbarred in California. These pro-life protesters, as you're well aware of, getting the FACE Act, this ridiculous statute thrown their way. They're trying to lock up grannies who are peaceful pro-life protesters. Get the heck out of here. So, you know, we have to try to rebalance this pendulum. And coming after Hunter Biden for these very, very legitimate and well-founded foreign corruption things that he has done in his sordid, not so kosher past, that is a very, very good thing to do in a Department of Justice come January 2025. It is good on the substantive legal merits and is good for tit for tat, mutually assured destruction purposes as well. So I have to at least hope that Donald Trump and his inner circle are considering it. I was very encouraged when I saw recently my friend John Yoo, the former high-ranking Bush DOJ official, who, you know, John's a friend, but he is a little less aggressive, I guess you would say, than me or you, Jesse, when it comes to this whole notion of mutually assured destruction. Even John Yoo reached the conclusion that some sort of prudential bloodying up of their noses in retaliation has to come in order to get us back to a neutral playing field. So when people like John Yoo are being red-pilled, so to speak, and kind of realizing what's going on here, I actually am a little optimistic that Donald Trump might actually just do it.
How about that? Hopeful. Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it, my friend. All right, let's talk about the political impact of this. Buck Sexton's going to join us next. He's always thought they were going to hang on to Joe. I wonder if what happened today has kind of changed his mind a little bit. We'll see. I'll talk to Buck about that. Maybe I'll ask him how he's sleeping, because maybe his mind isn't working as well as mine is. I sleep great every night. And if there's a night where I feel like I'm not going to sleep, maybe I got work on my mind or had too much caffeine that day, whatever the case may be, I take dream powder. No, it's not a drug, don't worry. All natural. It's melatonin, things like that. Beam is the one who makes it. It's essentially a cup of hot chocolate. That's all it tastes like. It's the best hot chocolate I think I've ever had in my life. It's cinnamon hot chocolate. I pour a little in a glass of milk, warm it up. I just sit there and just sip on it. And it's the only thing I've ever taken to sleep that doesn't make me feel like garbage the next day. You know how if you take something to sleep, a pill or something, you wake up and you're like, oh, you're half dead. Your body feels heavy. Not dream powder. You wake up and you're ready to go. You want 40% off? Isn't that ridiculous? Get a bag of dream powder. You'll never be without it. Shopbeam.com/JesseKelly is where you get it. We'll be back.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
There's no way Joe Biden is going to remain. There's no way these people in power are going to risk that power on this dementia-addled old fool.
This is about raw, bare-knuckled power when it comes to getting the votes you need in the places you need them, early voting, ballot harvesting, mail-in voting, the propaganda machinery of the Democrats. You bring all that together, and you could elect a turnip as the Democrat, and that's basically what they're going to do again. I would give you, I don't know how else to put this other than, we got to put a bet on this one. Whatever the most expensive lobster and all you can eat scampi option is at Red Lobster, you're going to have to pay for it for me if I'm right, and put on my Red Lobster bib with a photo taken, okay? I want Jesse Kelly doing the bib for me of Red Lobster. All you can eat scampi, my man. You know, that stuff doesn't come cheap. So I'm trying to get you prepared for this. And I will make good on my side of the bet too. If you are right, you can go Alaskan crab legs. It's been a good year in radio. We could do Alaskan crab legs for you at Red Lobster.
I actually forgot about the bib thing until Matt just played that back for Buck and I right now. Dang it. All right, Buck. I am curious. Joining me now, of course, Buck Sexton, host of the biggest radio show in the country, the acclaimed Buck Show. Buck, I am curious. I need you to shoot me straight here. You know, we're friends. How confident are you still in the wake of the news today, the Hunter Biden news? Joe Biden is obviously not getting any better at public speaking. How confident are you still that they're going to ride this pony all the way into the election?
Well, look, I'm glad that you're starting it out that way. And let me also note that I didn't realize in that clip, the all-you-can-eat shrimp, I apparently am a prophet when it comes to knowing that Red Lobster is going to go bankrupt. Because I was like, that's expensive. Yeah, turns out it was so expensive that they have to go into restructuring. Anyway, it's just the way it is, just the facts. I'm glad that you're not approaching me like a degenerate gambler who's asking for just $5 more to put on a pony after he's lost everything here. There is no way, okay? There is no way that they're going to replace Joe Biden with anyone other than Kamala Harris. And I'm going to tell you something. I've talked to some people who are, you know, the ones that I always want to hear from on this issue are they aren't insane, which means they like Trump, right? I mean, even I'll give credit to Russell Brand. He's basically like, if you're not crazy, you're going to vote for Trump this time. Like, if you're not completely opposed to like freedom and all that is good in the world, you're going to vote for Trump, not Biden. Okay. The debate, though, from people I know who are pro-Trump, but not everything he does is perfect, they're a little concerned about how this debate ends up going. Because for one thing, the expectations for Biden are so low, and we all know that. That he may come out of the debate with a bump and that may create some momentum. And I think even beyond that, they're going to ask Trump who won the 2020 election on stage with, you know, tens of millions of people watching. And you and I both know how that's going to go. Trump's just not going to back off that one bit. So I think Biden is banking it all on the turnaround or the beginning of the turnaround, I should say, that'll happen on that debate stage. You know, there are drugs. I found this out. There are things they can give people to like help with mental acuity and stuff because of dementia. I thought that was just a thing that people talked about. That's real. I've had doctors call into the show and say, no, there are, I forget the name of it, but there are stuff you can give people. They'll give it to them.
There is. No, and they very clearly have been giving it to him. Everyone remembers the State of the Union. He was so hopped up on amphetamines. He looked like Hunter S. Thompson up there. Everyone knows they're giving him something to try to get him through.
He looked
whatever
like Hunter
he's
Biden.
Getting through. Yeah. I used the wrong Hunter. How could I do that? It was spoon-fed for me. You know what? Let's go actually there, Buck. Okay, Hunter gets convicted today. It's not a small deal. We've all accepted that Hunter Biden's a criminal. Everyone knows it because he records his crimes. But it is a big deal that the son of the president is now a convicted felon, or is it anymore? Are we so used to all this stuff, Trump's convicted, Hunter's convicted, that it's not that important?
Yeah, I think that it doesn't move the needle. I think that people don't care, and especially because this is the most really low level from a public interest perspective. I don't know where you are on this. I actually think this law is kind of a garbage law. And I say that knowing that it's being used against our enemies right now politically. So, you know, that's to the good. It is the law. So if you're going to get Trump on a business records error, you know, from years ago, law is a law, right? So that's what they're saying. But just as a principle matter, I think that this thing about like if you've been using weed, you can't buy a gun and you're a felon if you do. Anyway, put that aside. I don't think anyone really cares. The big stuff is this selling influence to China, money laundering, you know, obviously tax evasion, failure to register as a foreign agent, which again, I don't think failure to register as a foreign agent, I didn't used to think that was a big deal, but it was when it came to Trump and Paul Manafort and all the rest of it. So if those are the rules, right, they got to play by the rules too. We have to make them play by the rules too. Which hasn't been happening nearly as much as it should. So no, I don't think anyone cares. I mean, Hunter's not going to spend it. You know, tell me if you disagree with any of this. Hunter's not going to spend a day in prison. So it's not, there's really no loss to him. I mean, everyone knows Biden's going to pardon him. That's not, it's funny that he says he's not, you know what I mean? But of course he's going to pardon his son. So we'll see.
Yeah, of course he's going to pardon his son. You know what? We're going to switch gears because you brought up old Trump, and the VP talk has been hot and heavy out there. You had Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin on your show, asked him about the VP stuff. This is what he said.
Have you talked to Trump or his team at all about being on this ticket potentially as a vice president? Have they reached out?
The reality, of course, is that I have been focused on the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I stay focused on the Commonwealth of Virginia. I've got a big job, which I love. And also, there's huge talent in the Republican Party. And so, I, of course, know all the names and the people that have been tossed around, and I deeply respect all of them. And I think it would be a great ticket with any of them. And so I am very, very confident in our ability to work hard for the president to be competitive in Virginia. And I think we got a real shot at it.
The most political answer I've ever heard in my life. These guys are such masters at saying absolutely nothing. But the VP thing, okay, Buck, you saw the short list. I have some loves, I have some hates on there, but it's not about me. What's smart for Trump? Who does he pick?
Well, first, just on the Youngkin answer there, that's not the response of somebody who's going to be Trump's VP. That's the response of somebody who's going to run for president in 2028. I think that's very clear. He's not in the mix for Trump VP. I don't think he wants that job. I don't think he would take that job, quite honestly. I think the same is true of Governor DeSantis in Florida. On the list you have there, okay, I'm just going to lay it out. I mean, I can do a sort of a rapid fire on this. Keep it up there for a second. J.D. Vance, I've said I think he should be the guy, and I've said I think he will be the guy. Rust Belt voters, white working class voters are going to determine this election. It's going to be determined in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Georgia maybe too, but I mean, those are the big three, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. J.D. Vance can speak to the white working class voters there. I know now he's a fancy head, you know, venture capital guy who went to Yale, but he grew up, as everyone knows from Hillbilly Elegy, in very sort of difficult white working class circumstances. Anyway, Marco Rubio, I mean, you know, Marco is fine. I got nothing bad to say about him. I think he's learned a lot since the days of the Gang of Eight Senate bill, which was an amnesty bill. I think he burned his hand on that. I think he burned his hand trying to tangle with Trump in 2016, but he's good on foreign policy stuff. The donors like him. He's slick. He brings the Latino component to it. Tim Scott, nice guy. Not good on BLM, if you remember back in 2020. And also he helped sink a federal judge in a way that I thought was I did not like it. So I think that Tim Scott is a very nice person from what I can tell. I don't know him. He seems like a very good man overall. But I don't think he'll win many black votes. So if it's about trying to get more of the black vote, I just don't believe that will happen. Elise Stefanik, good on Israel, but a liberal Republican. So take that for what it's worth. She's worried about climate change. Byron Donalds, is he really in contention? I haven't really heard that, but I'd have to look into Byron's record more. You know, it seems like a good dude. And then Ben Carson, a real doctor, unlike Jill Biden. Ben Carson is an impressive man, a soft-spoken, brilliant, very decent man. I can't see that being that. Because I think Trump doesn't really generally, I think he doesn't want to have a brawler in the mix. You know what I mean? It's like you don't want two guys in the bar who are ready to throw punches quickly. And so Ben Carson is would be a calming influence on Trump, I think, to the degree that that's possible.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, the VP should be what you're not. Buck, that's all we have time for today. Appreciate you, my friend. I can't wait for you to buy me Red Lobster when they shove Joe Biden out the door. All right. We have the Attorney General of Missouri. That's kind of cool. Before we get to him, let's talk about coffee. Where we buy it. Look, we all love coffee. Where do you get it, though? I get mine delivered to my front door. So I just have my coffee beans delivered. And I buy it from a company that shares and promotes my values. Blackout Coffee doesn't just believe what I believe behind closed doors. Hey, Jesse, we're kind of with you, but don't tell anybody. They print it on their merch. You can go buy coffee mugs from Blackout Coffee. I have one here. I just can't find it right now. It says life, God, guns, America. Blackout Coffee promotes the things we love. Come on. 20% off your first order? BlackoutCoffee.com/Jesse, the best coffee in the world, delivered to your front door by people who share your values. Sounds like a plan. BlackoutCoffee.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
The FBI is now investigating whether those alleged Hunter Biden emails are actually connected to a larger foreign intelligence operation.
They may be related to a foreign intelligence operation.
Foreign intelligence operation.
Foreign intelligence.
Foreign intelligence.
Foreign intelligence operation.
For all we know, these emails are made up.
The information found on the laptop may be part of a Russian disinformation campaign.
Part of a Russian disinformation effort.
Described by many intelligence experts as having hallmarks.
All the hallmarks of a Russian.
Russian disinformation
campaign.
This is a classic example of the right-wing media machine.
Interesting how all that turned out, isn't it? Joining me now, Attorney General of the great state of Missouri. I cannot believe that Missouri has become like the tip of the spear for freedom in this country. It's wild. Attorney General Andrew Bailey, one of the good ones. Well, it turns out it wasn't Russian disinformation. That's so odd because I was assured that it was.
Yeah, more lies from the left, fake news at its worst, designed to interfere with the election. We know in the case of Missouri v. Biden, the most important First Amendment suit in this nation's history, we obtained in discovery ample evidence to support the notion that the FBI was in possession of Hunter Biden's laptop 1 year before the story broke, knew of its authenticity, and then worked with social media moguls in Silicon Valley with increased frequency in the days and weeks leading up to that story breaking, planting the seed of doubt and injecting this idea that it would be a Russian disinformation story. And then there were secret communications between the FBI and big tech social media companies on the eve of the story breaking. And then the big tech social media at the government's demand pounced in order to suppress the story. If that isn't election interference, I don't know what is.
It is election interference, and it speaks to something so much larger than Hunter Biden. Honestly, that the president's son is a dirt ball is not exactly an important thing for the country, but that we have a secret state police agency that preemptively reached out to social media accounts to have them censor a story they knew to be true so Joe Biden could win an election. If you actually take in all that and realize what that means, where does that leave us as a country? How do we exist with a federal law enforcement arm that evil?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's the deep state at its worst. It's a deep state that was committed to depriving the American voting public of information necessary to make sound decisions at the ballot box. I think that it has been amplified since President Biden took office. Look, we've got to stop looking at lawfare in the context of individual cases. It's as if we're looking at trees and pretending there's no forest. But when you put the pieces together, you see that President Trump and people on the right have been censored by the federal government on big tech social media platforms. President Trump has been hailed into civil court to be sanctioned under civil law that's been abused in order to obtain that objective. He's been forced off the ballot illegally in several blue states, and now he has been prosecuted. Again, a perversion of the law where the judiciary has been complicit and the federal government has colluded with state prosecutors to obtain a prosecution not supported by the facts of the law that's legally specious and invalid on its face. Lawfare goes deeper than just the Manhattan District Attorney's Office or the Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney's Office. This is a coordinated effort by the left in collusion with the deep state to drive from public discourse and drive from the public domain any competing viewpoint or political opponent.
You are doing a lot of things there as Attorney General of Missouri, and I love it. I love it that at least some of our red state AGs are starting to get more aggressive. Can you talk about Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Planned Parenthood has a documented history in the state of Missouri of placing the destruction of human life ahead of the health and safety of women and children. My predecessor, Josh Hawley, as Attorney General, uncovered that Planned Parenthood was using a moldy abortion machine on women. I'm not talking about a machine they forgot to clean and left in the corner, one they were actively using on patients, refusing to comply with health and safety standards imposed by the state of Missouri. My immediate predecessor, Eric Schmidt, uncovered that agents of Planned Parenthood refused to comply with state statutes regarding retention of records of the procedures they were performing and necessary notification of warning to patients before they engaged in these risky procedures. And now in late 2023, the Project Veritas video from the clinic in Kansas City revealed agents of Planned Parenthood bragging about trafficking minors across state lines without parental consent and without complying with state mandatory notification statutes and forging documents in the process to obtain abortions for minors who were victims of sexual assault. My office launched a lawsuit to fight back. We've got to eliminate Planned Parenthood. They do not serve the best interests of the people of the state of Missouri. And again, this is a documented history of placing the destruction of human life ahead of the health and safety of their patients.
Gosh, it's so wonderful to hear an elected official in the GOP talk like this. How? Where are the rest of you? I'm very, very frustrated with the state of the GOP in this country. And I know I'm speaking to someone who's not part of that, but I'm very frustrated with the inaction, this hands-off approach to these people, as if we can live and let live with people who just slaughter babies like this and do things like this. You can't live with these people. We have to get them out.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think there's a big difference between being academic law school tough and being warrior tough. You know, when I joined the United States Army before law school to fight in the war on terror, I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Was proud to lead that fight in the battlefields in the war on terror and to come back home and be now leading that fight in courtrooms across the state of Missouri and across the nation. I think that this is the show me state. And here in Missouri, results matter. And I'm not interested in political talk. I'm interested in delivering wins for the freedom, safety, and prosperity of the people of the state of Missouri.
Let's talk about the student loan debt relief thing. Joe Biden's doing something illegal, and it's really wild. He gives speeches all the time now saying the Supreme Court said no, but that didn't stop me. Now, maybe my civics are a little out of whack, but I didn't think that was allowed. What's happening with all this?
Yeah, look, this is a constitutional crisis. You've got the president openly defying an order from the United States Supreme Court to illegally and unconstitutionally attempt to buy votes on the eve of an election in a key demographic that he's losing ground to day in and day out. He knows it's illegal. He knows the Supreme Court told him no, and he is so unfettered, untethered from any kind of decency or reality that he's out on the stump bragging about his willful violation of the law and the Constitution. Americans should be appalled by this. If President Trump had attempted this, the left would have been appalled and they would have pilloried him. And yet here, President Trump gets a pass. Look, even if you think that the president should redistribute $500 billion of wealth and saddle working families with Ivy League debt, surely we can agree that there's a process in place to do that. It's the United States Congress. The Supreme Court last June handed down its decision in the first iteration of this case and determined that Congress doesn't hide an elephant in a mouse hole. In other words, if Congress intends to grant the president that kind of expansive authority, the president has to point to explicit textual authority in a federal statute. Congress has twice rejected such bills, once in 2019 and again in 2021. Nothing has changed since the Supreme Court handed down its decision in this case last year. Missouri is uniquely situated in these cases because we have standing thanks to the fact that we administer student loan payments and repayments through the Missouri Higher Education Loan Authority, MOHELA, which is an instrumentality of the state. That was a central centerpiece of our win in the Supreme Court last term, and we believe it'll result in the court staying the president's plan in the Eastern District of Missouri in our litigation now.
Can you, to wrap this whole thing up, can you explain what you view the role of red states going forward is? It's very obvious to me that, at least under Joe Biden and Democrats, this government is going to be hostile to a lot of people in their way of life in ways that it never really has in this country. Red states, especially red state AGs, more so than even governors, need to protect their citizens, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think it goes beyond just open hostility. I think President Biden and those on the woke left threaten our very existence. Again, this isn't about free, fair, and open debate. They want to censor the right. They want to persecute and prosecute the right. They want to eliminate from public discourse any viewpoint they disagree with, and they think they can use the government to do that. It is incumbent upon red states to be the vanguard in the fight against this kind of open attacks on our way of life and on our system of government and our very the very essence of who we are as the United States of America.
Mr. Attorney General, you please keep going. Stay right where you are. We need you there. All right. Carol Markowitz is going to join us next. Andrew Cuomo gave some testimony behind closed doors about all this COVID stuff. I wonder why behind closed doors. That'll be interesting. We'll talk to Carol in a moment. Before we talk to Carol, let me talk to you about putting your money where your morals are. This is something we all struggle with, myself included. Where do I spend my money? Where do I not spend my money? Because now that corporate America has chosen to get involved in this culture war, we have to be purposeful about it. We can't fund the people who are killing us. And if you have Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, you're funding the people who are killing us. It's Pride Month. Go look up your cell phone company and see what they're doing for Pride Month. Switch to Pure Talk. Pure Talk is the patriotic cell phone company. Their CEO is a Vietnam veteran. They love this country. They promote this country. You save money. Same 5G network, and you save money on top of all that. Not only are you putting your money with someone who believes in what you believe in, you're putting less of it in there. It's easy to switch. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Go switch. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Andrew Cuomo, remember that? Remember that name? He used to be the governor of New York before he got knifed in the back by Letitia James and the whole crew up there. No, it wasn't Republicans that took out Andrew Cuomo. But he also has the distinction of murdering about 15,000 of his own citizens, probably a record for any American governor. He gave testimony today about all his screw-ups, if we're going to be very, very kind, which I am not, during COVID. Joining me now, the host of the Carol Markowitz Show to talk about that. Carol, so he gave closed-door testimony today. Behind closed doors? I don't know how to say that. I'm not a dork lawyer. Anyway, that's weird that a man who loves the camera so much should be testifying behind closed doors.
It is weird. You know, during the COVID, the beginning of COVID, he was very public about being on TV every day, talking about how great he's doing. And I lived in New York at the time, and I couldn't help but notice that we were having the highest number of deaths anywhere in the whole world, actually, at that point. So it was interesting that he was heralded as his hero. What concerns me about Cuomo is that he is a snake, yes, but he's very charming. He ends up somehow convincing other politicians that he's capable. And I don't know what he said behind those closed doors today, but I'm worried about it.
I did see that he had Dr. Witch on with him on a podcast, and this is what they had to talk about.
Government had no capacity to enforce any of this. You must wear a mask. And people wore masks in New York. But if they said, I'm not wearing a mask, there was nothing I could do about it. You must close your private business. I won't. Well, there was nothing I could really do about it. It was really all voluntary. And it was extraordinary when you think about it that society acted with that uniformity voluntarily because I had no enforcement capacity.
Carol, you lived in New York at the time. Is that an honest assessment of how things were?
It's so galling to watch him rewrite history. I know so many people who lost their businesses, who lost their livelihoods, people who got tickets for the most ridiculous things, for not having food with their alcohol at their bars. It was called the Cuomo snacks. You got fined for that. You got fined if somebody walked into your business not wearing a mask and you didn't force them out. All of these things happened. I chronicled it over and over again. I seemed crazy because I just kept writing about the same thing and how awful it was and how much damage he was doing to my city over and over again until I couldn't take it anymore and I had to leave. But it was a really crazy time, made all the crazier by a politician who was so high on his own supply and just being extremely erratic, not making any scientific sense, obviously, but just being so celebrated and so heralded as some kind of hero when he was destroying the city, when he was destroying the state, and that, you know, they still haven't climbed out of it, and it's really sad to watch.
Carol, I did some talk today about Joe Biden, the Hunter Biden stuff, about how this, it really provides the system with the opportunity they needed, at least part of it, to maybe push old Joe out the door. I know he has to go out voluntarily after the convention. I understand all the rules, but isn't this just the gold plate opportunity for them to say, hey, Joe, it's time to retire?
Maybe, but I don't see how they get rid of Joe and Kamala. So let's say they do get rid of Joe Biden. I still think they have a big Kamala Harris issue. And I know, you know, we say things like, oh, Democrats could just do whatever they want. And they do whatever they want. But I just don't see how they get rid of both of them. So I think, and you know, we might be getting to the point where Kamala might even have better electoral chances than Joe Biden, because he's polling so low, his approval rating is so low, everybody sees he's like a walking corpse. And so I always thought she was by far the larger liability, but now I'm not so sure anymore.
Yeah, being passed over for the presidency would be a lot for her to swallow. I did see the EU, they were kind of rejecting the old politicians to kind of change gears here. And some of the dirty commies in France were upset about it. Here it was.
Consultation prévue à l'article 12 de notre Constitution. J'ai décidé de vous redonner le choix de notre avenir parlementaire par le vote. Je dissous donc la souveraineté.
All right, Carol, I don't speak French. I only speak American, but they seem super upset about what's happening over there. What is happening over there?
Well, I wouldn't say things have completely turned around in Europe, but it's a slight, you know, little light at the end of a very dark tunnel. They had EU elections over the last few days, and in France, particularly, the Marine Le Pen's kind of right-wing party got double the votes of Macron's allegedly centrist party. These are just terms that they use. I don't believe in any of this. And so it's a sign potentially that Europe is waking up. A lot of the countries that had a more conservative-leaning MEPs sent to the parliament in Brussels, they had their own elections coming up, and France is one of them. Macron just called for snap elections because of all of this, and they may end up with a more right-leaning leadership. The issues are things like unchecked immigration, high cost of living, spending their money on nonsense. All of this kind of comes together, and you see the same kind of things that we're facing here. I see a little bit of hope in Europe. I hope that they are able to continue down this path. There's still a lot of commies, Jesse. Don't get me wrong. I think if all the right-wing parties in the European Parliament joined together, they would still only be the second to the leftists. So let's not get too excited too fast. But, you know, the times, they may be a-changing.
It's not just France. It's Britain. It's a bunch of countries overseas. They're tired of watching their countries get filled up with barbarian hordes from other countries. Are Americans there, too? I understand everyone hates Joe Biden, or at least they hate his policies. Yeah. I get all that. But you know me, Carol. I'm more of a cynical type. I don't know that I see America being as angry as the Europeans are right now about it.
Well, I would say that they're also in a far worse position than we are. They're maybe 10 years, you know, ahead of us in terms of this unchecked immigration problem. So in 10 years, we might also be protesting in the streets. Who knows? But, you know, I am hopeful. Like things like Tommy Robinson's protests in Britain, he's attracting humongous crowds, waving British flags, saying we're not going to take it anymore. We'll see what happens. He has a big protest coming up in at the end of July. That might be a real game changer for Europe in general. If he does manage to pull as big a crowd as he's thinking he's going to pull, I think it is going to be a sign of something. I don't think we're there yet, but we also haven't hit the kind of rock bottom that Europe has. Britain and the rest of Europe is in serious, serious trouble. I don't know that they could turn it around. I hope they can, and I hope that this is the beginning of that.
I hope so. Thank you, Carol. Come back soon. All right. We have light in the mood. It involves dogs. Next.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood. To lighten the mood today, we're going to focus on dogs because they always lighten the mood. And the jealousy of dogs is amazing. Whenever I get home from work, the wife runs up to me, starts kissing on me like she's only human. The dog will come stick his nose right in there. Hey, what about me? This dog's jealous too. I'll see you tomorrow.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.